Welcome to the National Bicycle Greenway's Mountain Mover podcast series. Here you will get up close and personal with people who are taking giant steps for the betterment of cyclists and for the planet itself. Okay, we're here today from his factory in Eugene, Oregon, a true bicycle renaissance man, a fellow named Jan Vandertime, who I've had the pleasure to know for a number of years. And he's always been just light years ahead of the curve. Jan, how you doing today, guy?
Hey, very good. Little rain, but other than that, pretty good.
A little rain? Isn't that the theme in Eugene?
Well, actually, we fool everybody. We always tell them that, and actually we have sun quite a bit during the winter. We don't want anybody to know that.
Oh, good. I'm sure listeners across the nation are going to want to know. I was kind of surprised to find out that Eugene is probably, 100,000 people? Is that the population there?
It's about 130,000, and then there's another 100,000+ in the town that's right on the edge of the river next to Eugene, Springfield.
Okay. Okay. The reason that surprised me is because Eugene has always had such a huge impact on lots of different things, and where a national magnitude is concerned. And I was surprised to find out that it was relatively small, you know. And let's get into the meat of some of this. Jan, where did you grow up at?
Well, Northeast, primarily New England.
Okay, and New England being the states of Maine or Boston?
Well, I spent some time in Maine. I spent some time in Vermont, a lot of time in Vermont, actually. A bunch of time in western Massachusetts and near Boston.
Well, you know, and you've been a long-time bike guy. Where did you, where did you start developing some of the skills that you have in this realm?
Well, probably the first thing that got me going on bikes was being a paper boy in New England in the wintertime. That's quite an interesting challenge. From there, probably one of the biggest evolutions in my thinking about bicycling was when I went out to California to race and in the Santa Cruz area, and this is in the late 70s, and I met people who used bicycles exclusively for their transportation, and they didn't own cars, and it was the first time in my life that I had been around people who actually didn't think of the car as something you had to have. In fact, they mostly thought it was something you really didn't want.
Had you raced in the Northeast? Was that what brought you out this way?
I started racing with West Hill Shop in Brattleboro, Vermont. And then I basically was looking for some serious challenge. I really wanted to find the most advanced racing in the country at the time. And so Santa Cruz and Monterey and San Francisco, all that area was pretty much one of the best areas for training, and just there was a lot of talent. So that's what got me to Santa Cruz. You know, and I had my old 10-speed bike, and I had ordered a Richard Sachs before I left, and it was a pretty exciting place to be. And, you know, just I can remember sitting on porches, truing wheels with folks at night, drinking beer. Just good times and a lot of camaraderie. There was no fanatical racing teams. There was no money in the sport. So it was pretty much you had to love doing it.
And then you came back to Santa Cruz. You went to back to Vermont, I guess?
Well, in the early 80s, I was in Europe. So,
racing?
Not racing. No, yeah. I was in love with a Swiss woman and got very involved in agricultural work and started a community-supported agriculture project in Zurich, which then I later took that idea back and which started the CSA movement in the United States.
CSA?
Community-supported agriculture. Yeah, basically I wrote a piece for Organic Gardening magazine. That was about 83 or so.
Uh-huh.
And that kind of got things going because that was a major, large-scale readership. So people were pretty excited, and from there it just started flying. And,
wow. How exciting, man.
But at my time in Europe, I really got excited about bicycles again, and in particular load-carrying bicycles. and utility bicycles. And so when I came back to the country, it was kind of hard to focus on farming issues because I was so excited about wanting to do bicycles and build bicycles. And so it took me about 3-4 years before I started getting into bike building in the United States.
Okay, you came to Santa Cruz where I met you the first time, the second time, I guess, and you did some welding work on my recumbent. You had that house over there by the junior high school.
Yeah. Basically, the second time I came, I was very interested in aquaculture, and so I kind of researched and found that the best places for work on aquaculture were happening in California, in the Santa Cruz and the Monterey area. So I went out to California basically to get involved, and I got a job at a shellfish hatchery up at Pigeon Point where the lighthouse is. I don't believe it exists anymore, the shellfish hatchery, but it was there for quite a long time. And at the same time, I was kind of tinkering around in shop making some very basic cargo bikes.
You then went to, what, New York or something like that to see if you can get something going there?
I was in New York City and worked with George Bliss, who has the Pony Enterprise in New York City, which is a pedicab company, pedicabs of New York. And I worked with him, and we kind of had an interesting partnership working on crazy bikes. So they were kind of theatrical bikes and street bikes and pedicabs. And we did a lot of experimentation and gained a lot of skills about urban area. And it was the first time I'd lived in New York, and it was pretty major experience in terms of understanding urban cargo carrying and transport of goods and people.
At what point did you then end up in Eugene?
1990, I came to Eugene. Mm-hmm. And came here pretty much because of Dick Ryan was somebody I had known. Kind of the godfather or whatever the term is, the father of recumbency in this country in a way. And I had known him from Boston, the Boston area. Mm-hmm. And he had come out to have the folks who make Bike Friday, the bicycles, he had come out to have them work and build his frames, his recumbent frames. And so I knew that he was out here, and I knew this was a mecca for bike building. And that's what drew me out. And so I shared shop space with Dick Ryan for about 2 years. And found Burley Design Co-op right down the street from them, so I got to know a lot about what they were doing. And Co-Motion was very close. They were in a small building at the time. All these companies have grown a lot. But so it was Burley, Co-Motion, and Bike Friday.
And then you had Bike E up the street in Corvallis.
And Bike E at the time in Corvallis, absolutely.
Right, yeah, okay. And then Dick left.
Then Dick went back to the East. And pretty much then I had had ideas for kind of a multi-use facility for a long time that would include education and with kids in particular. And that was a concept I had seen in Europe quite a bit. And it really struck me the synchronicity of having a lot of projects in one space, one building. How healthy that was and how strong that was. And so when I got back to the States, I'd always wanted to do that, to have a space that would have a bunch of different projects happening in it. So I got a proposal together, and I presented it to somebody in Eugene who was a landowner, property owner, and he liked the proposal, and he was willing to take a risk with me, and we actually got a 8,000 square foot building that we then went forward and renovated, and it took us quite a while to do, but we finally got a space that was good for a bike shop and a fabrication. Those were the first two things that we had online, and so it was kind of risky, though, you know, having an 8,000 square foot building and basically filling up two little quarters of it at the time. And but you know, one of the things that a lot of people have asked me, they ask about the Center for Appropriate Transport. They ask, how did it start and what's helped you or kept it going? And I would give the advice to search out property owners who have a sympathetic ear, because really, if you don't have secure property, you don't have anything. And we've been very lucky to be here for 15 years almost, and to be to have a space that's secure, and the rent is basically pays his bills, and that's it. And so he's not reaming us on rent. And that's what usually gets a lot of people in trouble, is that the expense of their building, and it's pulled out from under them by developers or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Can you, now, the Center for Appropriate Transport was the result of this this vision you had. Can you tell us the website for that?
www.catoregon, all one word, .org.
Catoregon.org.
Yep.
That's going to get me to the CAT site. Great. Okay.
Yep.
Now, in terms of the big picture, you want to replicate this, or I think that was initially the vision you held of producing CATs, a nationwide network of CATs. Is that, am I correct in assuming that?
Yeah, that's okay. Something I've been wanting to do for quite a while.
Okay.
Actually, some of it wouldn't be necessarily as easy to duplicate as other parts, but for example, our workspace rental area, it requires some stands, and we started with 3 stands initially. Now we have 8. We had 3 stands, and then there's two banks of tools and counter space. And essentially, that's what got us going in the workspace rental area. So people could come in, and they come in for $48 a year and rent workspace for membership. They can get assistance if they want for $1 for 5 minutes, and they can get parts at discount if they're a member. That concept is one that, when we first started, I did a research, and there were about 9 of these kind of projects around the country. Broadway Bicycle School in Boston, and Bicycle Repair Collective up in Portland, Oregon. And so that was pretty inspiring. And that's one of the ideas I think is easily duplicatable. And we also build bike racks with Eugene Rackworks, and that's another one that I think could be relatively easy to duplicate. A little more, you need a tube bender, and you need some wire feed welding equipment, and you need a basic shop, but it's minimal compared to building bikes, which we do as well with Human Power Machines, is really kind of a complicated thing to duplicate. Peddlers Express is another one. We have the courier company that runs the streets of Eugene. We have 3 bikes that are cargo load carriers that are running all the time almost, and we have tricycles and trailers, load-carrying vehicles. And that's, to set up with 1 bike or 2 bikes isn't a huge investment. You have a garage. So, that's relatively duplicatable as well. And Oregon Cycling, for example, that's another project that we do. State Bicycling Paper, it's been around since the 80s. Probably one of the longest running regional papers in the United States. That paper, it might be hard to duplicate that, but once again, it's something that, like newsletters, that sort of thing could be copied, that sort of concept. So, it's not, and people might do other things. They might have something like trips for kids, mountain bike rides that take kids out. They might do other projects, different variations of bicycle-related projects. Our big thing that's really, I'd really like to see duplicated, though, is our educational programs. We actually have gotten contracts with school districts in our area where we can have kids come to us who are oftentimes are, hands-on type of kids, and they come to us, and we are a regular school, publicly funded school. So we get per hour, in our case, we get paid the rate that the state pays public schools to work with kids. Mine is 20%. The school districts are allowed to take that, and they sure do. But it's publicly funded education, and it's bicycle related, and that is a little bit different than anywhere I know of in the country.
Okay, I want to come back to all this and touch on all these things. I want to go through them a little bit more, one by one. I'm kind of familiar with your space because I was up there, last summer, at the end of last summer. And just for our listenership, Jan's got a two-story building up there in Eugene. It takes up 8,000 square feet. It's huge. It's a tremendous space, and I can't paint a good enough picture for you to kind of really understand what it looks like inside of there to see all the activity that's going on. It's just amazing. He's got a bike museum in there. He's got a full-on regular bike shop. His bike shop has got a parts inventory that they've cataloged all these used parts that are ready for such as brakes and every other which thing like that. It's just amazing. But I want to touch just for a second, if I can, on the recumbents that you on your recumbent line and the lineup and things like that. You build trailers there. You also build cargo bikes. How many different types of recumbents do you make?
Well, we make a folding recumbent, which is called Phaser. There aren't too many folding recumbents in the world. Bike Friday makes one, or did make one. I don't know whether they're back online. I think they are, with one that stopped for a while. There are a couple of European companies that do, but there's really not much. So that's one of the things, and that kind of comes off the invention that was a major part of designing the Swift Folder, which is kind of familiar to people on the East Coast more maybe than the West Coast. So that was kind of a modification of the Swift Folder, the Phaser. So that's a folding recumbent. It's in a suitcase, basically, and a bag. Another one is the Roadster, which is a 26-inch wheeled recumbent, which is quite long. Got upright handlebars. Very, very cushy ride, to say the least. And that's actually, there is really only one other 26-inch recumbent that's quality right now. So we got a little niche there. Another one is the Trick, which is an aluminum recumbent, which is pretty low-cost recumbent in the world of recumbents. Goes for $900. And another one is the Triton, which is a three-wheeled tricycle, which has one wheel in the front and two wheels in the back. Very, very, not so low as some of them. So you can actually, it's kind of like sitting in a chair. So I've done a lot of work for people who are alter-abled to modify them because it's very comfortable to get in and out of. And then the tri-hauler is a load-carrying tricycle. It's kind of, the inspiration for it was the Flevo tricycle out of Europe, out of the Netherlands. Mm-hmm. Modified that design quite a bit, but that's a recumbent to carry. That's the workhorse of our tricycles, to say the least. It can carry 600-700 pounds of cargo, and it oftentimes does because we deliver food, organic nuts and seeds and oils from a distributor around to the city of Eugene, using that. And so that's the recumbent fleet, and then we have the work bikes.
Yeah, what's exciting about that is the fact that you build these bikes from a very well supplied manufacturing facility. You've got bead blasters, you've got a spray booth, welders, frame jigs, compressors, hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of tools and the hardware that works with these kinds of bikes. Am I correct in saying that?
Yeah, a lot of the, you know, like I mentioned earlier, I started off with a small corner being able to fill it with my tools and, you know, sort of expanded over the years. And one of the things about doing the educational work is we can write grants. We are a nonprofit. The whole organization is a nonprofit. Human Power Design, Machine Designs are my design, so I contract with a nonprofit with them. But other than that, it's all in the nonprofit. And so we could write grants. And so we got one of the things that's really great about that is we could get things that are items that might be hard normally to have but are really needed in an education facility, such as air filtration equipment that hangs from the ceiling, large-scale air filtration. You know, our powder coating system is state-of-the-art, and there are people who donated, you know, for that because they were very interested in having us teach that skill. So the companies that produce the equipment, individuals donated to have something, you know, normally it would be prohibitive for a small builder to get into. It's added up. It's pretty amazing. We still don't make a lot of money, but you know, a lot of that has to do with the fact that we work with small groups of kids. We have no more than 8 kids in a class, and we have an AM and a PM class of kids, and they're here for 3 hours. And as most people know, most schools have 40 kids in a class, and so it's a matter of scale and economics. So when you work with 8, it definitely changes the economics. But we find it were really worthwhile, and these kids have real success when we have small class sizes. So that's why we do it.
So you've got 8 kids in a class. You've got 2 shifts. You've got an AM shift and a PM shift. How many graduates are there that can say that they graduated from CAT?
A bike school. Well, it's interesting. I have the shop mechanic right now, and the manager of the shop, Eugene Bicycle Workshop, which is about a 2,000 square foot shop area, he has actually graduated last year and is now working for us. And there's another employee right now that went to school here when he was 12, and he's now like 24 years old, and he's working managing Peddlers Express. So that's one of the fine things for me is that, you know, that we get people who went to school here. But over the years, there have probably been, over the years, we've run the program differently depending on what year. But, you know, probably over 1,000 kids have come through here and experienced this over the years. We've been
set
up since about 94, 95. Yeah, it's interesting. You know, we talk about transportation. The big thing we do is we live it. Pretty much over the years, I can count the people who've driven to CAT to work here. There are very few of them. Everybody rides. And so the ethic of commuting, and many of us don't have cars and really love it. So it's kind of the silent sort of approach to advocacy. You just do it, and the kids watch. They see stuff and they observe.
You teach industrial sewing. You teach journalism. You teach welding. You have girl welders that have taken these crafts up as well.
Yeah, we've had women over the history of CAT who have taught welding, taught machining. Usually, and this is one of the things I find really sad, is that there still is gender stereotypes about welding and machine work. So a lot of times it's the majority of our students are guys, but every once in a while we have girls come in, and it's always great. And then we have women who every once in a while pop in who we train, and we've trained quite a few women bike mechanics who are now at different locations around the United States. And that I'm pretty proud of, because I find it really dismal how few women are in the bike industry, either manufacturing or bike mechanics.
And you also teach gardening. You've got an off-site garden location.
Yeah, we're right in the kind of the center of the city of Eugene. The Butte, which is a little hill, is right near us. And right down from the Butte is a park, and Skinner Butte Park, which is kind of like the Central Park of Eugene. And in that park, we started about 6 years ago and set up a community garden project. And so it's presently it's 1 acre. There's up to 2 acres that we can work with, but there's 1 acre of community garden irrigated. We've gotten it irrigated. We've gotten a fence around it. Beautiful fence gates. Work there 1 day a week. They go down to the farm. We call it Skinner City Farm. And that's pretty exciting because it gets kids out, it gets them, touching the earth. Which I think it's really healthy. A lot of the kids we work with are, they're high energy. And yesterday we were down there putting compost around our bushes and that are all the way around the garden plot. And kids are really getting into it. Digging trenches for water drainage. It was raining pretty heavy, so it's great to have that as a piece of a real physical activity, and learning how to grow food. So the kids actually learn how to, like this year, they planted salad greens, they planted leeks, they planted corn, beans, the whole shebang. So,
yeah, you've got some great programs there, and you got a lot of great now it sounds like hardware and a lot of great stuff happening. Who writes the grants? Are you the guy that does the grant writing?
Well, I'm always asking, what our funding's based on. And, if anybody's familiar with the nonprofit sector right now, there are a lot of worries about how to finance programs because our present government is not being exactly generous to the nonprofit sector in a lot of ways. And so a lot of people worry about it because the grants and the foundation direction is kind of slowing down. And so what we've been doing for a long time is we've been basing a lot of our funding on pretty much two things. One is product, so selling bike racks, selling bicycles. The other one is the educational work that we do.
I see.
So those are the two, so it's hard services and hard product is for me. And I really think, I think nonprofit sector really needs to look at that closely and try to incorporate that wherever possible, to actually do business. That's, and for me, it feels a lot more secure. It also feels secure, fiscally more secure to have a diversity of income streams. So, the educational system is probably not going to fall apart real soon, and I think we'll continue to get kids wanting to come here. And bike racks are needed, and because in the city of Eugene, there's actually a requirement that they must, if you do a renovation or a construction site, you must put bike racks in. It's a law, so that'll be around for a while, and hopefully. People working on their bikes. We've had probably the best year we've ever had this year. I think people are really starting to wake up to the idea of utilizing a bike, even if it's only part-time in their life, for commuting, for getting around. And so this year's been really great. It's in the bike shop. We've sold more used bikes probably than ever before. We recycle used bikes, and people make donations to us. The University of Oregon has a lot of bikes that get left behind when students leave at the end of the summer. We get all those bikes. People know that, they donate bikes to the book a bit and parts.
Huh. Okay, you talk about Eugene, the Pedalers Express, and that's kind of become a phenomenon, a nationwide phenomenon. A number of cities have bike riders who pedal around delivering parcels and things like that. Now, was that your idea? Were you the first one that you know of that got something like that going?
Yeah, Pedalers Express, pretty much what inspired me about it was being in Europe. And we had a farm project in Europe that I was working with, and we wanted to deliver food from it was organic food from the farm into the city of Zurich, into quartiers in the city of Zurich. And so, we kind of were like, what are we doing? And we had a truck, and we were kind of like, boy, what are we doing growing organic food and driving our food into the city? And so I started researching, and I took a trip all over Europe and kind of became very, very knowledgeable about the subject of cargo utility bikes. And just loved the people I met and places I visited and the designs that I saw. One of them was the Long John out of Denmark, and that's a kind of a classic car in Europe. And I saw that, and I thought, boy, if we could modify that and make that really light and put good brakes and gearing on it, that'd be something else. And so that's essentially what I did, is I came back and I modified the Danish version. And created the first work bike. It really, works in cycles, I should say. They've been doing work bikes for years, forever, in New York City. But their stuff is really heavy, and it wasn't. It has a it's very utilitarian, and I really respect the usage. But it wasn't something that a bicyclist who's really into bikes. I mean, you can kind of tell that you know they're not the ones designing the Workmans. So it was kind of a niche that I still think it's left in this country for them, because urban areas have a huge amount of cargo that's being moved around. You know, when you think of a car that can go 100 miles an hour, you know, average speed in New York City is 9 miles an hour. Started it in 1990, had Peddlers Express going in Eugene, and, started just building up our client base. And we do, architects, lawyers, food, newspapers, you name it. I mean, it's pretty amazing the things we've carried in the city.
1990 was the year that
1990,
you...
yeah.
Okay, great. So, and I'm going to come back to that. Make sure I've got this correctly underscored. When you say 1990, Peddlers Express Eugene, was that the first?
Yes, yeah.
There wasn't any such Peddler Express anywhere in the United States?
Nope, didn't exist.
Huh. Wow.
There was really no organized, people who used cargo bikes didn't really, you know, there were worksman cycles usually, or Asian knockoff type of things. And they usually use them internally in factories, on factory floors, where they
right.
definitely make sense.
Right, right.
But they didn't use them for exclusive cargo delivery companies. So Peddlers Express concept's pretty new.
Okay, so now is that the name? Was that the name you used as well, Peddlers Express? Was that your brainchild?
Yeah.
Wow,
yeah.
So PedEx.
PedEx, yeah. Well, yeah, and it's always funny, you know, the Berkeley group, they got in trouble at one point because they literally put the name PedEx on their bikes, and you could imagine what happened.
What happened?
Well, they had to change the name. They didn't have the funding to take on PedEx.
Oh, okay, I got it. Excellent. Okay. Now, you've got a museum there. How many bikes do you have in that museum? Probably about 20?
Well, we call it the Rideable Museum because one of the things is everything pretty much can be ridden. We have a couple bikes hanging, I shouldn't say a couple. It's probably 12 bikes hanging up. On the floor, we have... we come in tandem, for example. So sometimes in the summer, people will come by and they've never been on a recumbent, and somebody's a little afraid to try one out, and so they can get on the back, and the person who's more confident gets on the front of the recumbent, and they take off. And so we allow test rides for 10 minutes or so, and if they want, they can rent them. So we have a rental setup as well. And so all the product that we make here is for rent, including our trailers and our work bikes, and then all the recumbents we build. And then we have odd recumbents sometimes that we've picked up here and there. So it's pretty diverse. It's pretty much, I probably can't think of another place I've ever seen or heard of where there's such a collection of recumbents and work bikes in one space.
Such a collection of bike energy. It's phenomenal. Well, listen, Jan, in the interest of some measure of brevity, that's all really we have time for today. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
Well, I think the synergy of the building is kind of symbolic of something. We have a whole bunch of projects that happen in one building. So that, I think, that strength is something that I think one should always look at that if possible, because there's something about not going the hard way by yourself that helps. And I know that other groups around the country have started to pick up on that and really are trying to combine efforts together, and I think that's what's important. I think it really is the way to do these kind of things that are still pretty unusual in this society.
Wow. Well, Jan, thanks for taking time for us today. Thanks for making the world a better place and for using the bicycle to do so. So I guess with that said, I just want to say thanks for you, guy.
Well, thank you, and keep up your good work.
All right, Jan. See you later. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
That wraps up another edition of the National Bicycle Greenways Mountain Movers podcast series. We hope you enjoyed it. This has been NBG Director and Awake Again author Martin Krieg. For more info about the NBG, go to nationalbicyclegreenway.com. To access this podcast in the future and to hear other shakers and movers that we've interviewed, go to bikeroute.com.